Welcome to the State of Energy. I'm Rand DeWitt, along with a man who was once bitten by a rattlesnake. After 5 days of excruciating pain, the snake finally died.
Wow.
Tom Clark, Executive Director of Rocky Mountain Propane Association. How is your day going, Mr. Clark?
Oh, man.
Mr. Western Region?
It's a beautiful day today. It's a little bit chilly outside, but it's a great day to use some propane to heat up your house. That's for sure.
Well, you know, and our director, Tony, he's actually going to Hawaii to do some market research on Oahu, make sure that they're using enough propane over there.
I mean, you just got back from Hawaii from your second trip this year. Am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
What's going on? What is it I'm doing wrong?
You're not hanging out with Tony and I enough down here in the Southwest. You know, we're just going to make sure that, you know, the frontier is contained for you when you're ready.
Well, I did the opposite. While you were in Hawaii, I was enjoying our annual spring meeting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And we got to do a beautiful snowmobiling trip from Togedy Lodge up to Brooks Lake Lodge. So I guess you missed out on that one. So
I did. Those pictures look so great. And I love sleds. I mean, we used to have an Arctic Cat when I was growing up in Maine. And just love snowmobiling. So much fun. And those were great pictures. But it was just a stark contrast from where I was in, you know, board shorts, flip-flops, and a t-shirt. So
yeah, well, shout out to some of our sponsors that helped us pull that event off. Almost 200 people showed up to that, and it was a good turnout. So thanks everybody's support for that.
Anybody from One Tank hanging out?
There was no One Tank guys there, but I know that, you know, we put out some social media stuff and we spread some FOMO, and I think we got some people signed up for our next one for sure.
Nice. Well, and something else is coming up very soon in May. Once again, the 74th annual Western Propane Trade Show and Convention, May 13th to the 17th at Silver Legacy Hotel and Reno Events Center. You know what? We've been through this quite a few times. I mean, first time COVID was going on, then there were fires going on, and it's a very special space and place for us when we hang out in Reno.
And we will be there, and we're going to be doing our broadcast right from the Western Propane Convention in Reno, and we'll probably play some poker again. Hopefully I win again.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were in a tournament, but, you know, it's one of those things where you can keep rebuying. And I think Tom rebought more than he won. I don't know how that worked.
If I remember correctly, somebody else had to borrow money from me to rebuy.
Well, don't talk about your wife. That's his name
starts.
Up,
his name starts with R and ends with and.
Because you wouldn't let me leave the table because you're afraid I wouldn't come back. Uh-uh. Going to the ATM. No, you're staying right here.
Oh, boy.
But that's going to be great. So check that out with us. Join us. And we're looking forward to seeing everyone out there once again. Go to thestateofenergy.com. Find out where to buy propane near you by simply using the zip code that you have. Also, you can check out the past shows, rebates. We're also on Instagram at the State of Energy, getting a lot of new followers from Russia. Again, I don't know what's going on there, but we've got a lot of Russian folks that are following us on Instagram.
Yeah, they love their energy. You know, they gotta follow up on what's going on in the energy world.
And you know how I know that propane is actually starting to get more recognized? You know how I knew this? Because I went to Google and I asked a question. I asked, is propane a good industry to work in?
What did it tell you?
Stand by.
According to Generadio Next Propane Pros, speaking of down the line, when you work in propane, you can rest assured that your career path is secure. Propane is a rapidly growing industry that has a place in renewable energy planning. Propane meets guidelines for the Clean Air Act and can serve as a supplementary energy source for many energy alternatives.
That's Google. They're
wow.
Starting to come on board.
They're seeing the light.
They are. They're seeing the blue flame.
You know why propane is going to be so important coming up in the next, 10, 15 years?
Because we're going to get hit with an EMP and not have any electricity that we're able to use through the power lines?
No, not even close. Okay. Something even worse than that. Some new EPA rules and regulations that just came out this week. I mean, this is brand new stuff, hot off the press.
This is breaking news because this is something that when I was driving over to the studio, you hit me up with this, and this is huge news.
It is huge news. And so this has been going on for a long time. We've been talking about EPA emission rules for 2027. And, you know, we kind of knew what those rules were going to be, what kind of the a roundabout way what they were going to be. But the final ruling just came out on March 29th. And it's pretty strict. And it's going to really change the way that trucking, even your own personal vehicle, but it's personal vehicles and heavy duty trucks. It's going to change the way those manufacturers have to meet these different standards. And it really forces them to move to an electric vehicle instead of using gas. And fortunately, propane actually has engines that'll meet those standards today. So I'm kind of torn about this because part of me is like, holy cow, we've done so much over the last 30, 40, 50 years of cleaning up our emissions. And this is just really, it's like a force. They've reduced the standard so much that they're forcing to go to electricity, calling it zero emissions, which is weird because everybody knows that electricity is not zero emissions. But it's really forcing those manufacturers to produce an electric vehicle that apparently not a whole lot of people are excited about buying.
Yeah, ask Ford how that's going.
Well, I'll talk about Ford here in just a minute, but let's just talk about the emissions that we've been dealing with since 1974. This has been going on for a long time, but the first emissions rules that came out really it started in the 70s, and we were
when everybody was lining up for gas.
Well, and emissions, it was valid. I mean, vehicles in the 70s were super dirty, right?
Right.
Look at the things we've talked about just Los Angeles air quality in the 70s and 80s. It was terrible, right?
Gross.
So emissions standards, EPA emission standards came out in about the 70s for heavy duty trucks. And it's 74, 79, 85, 88, all these different changes throughout the 90s. We came in with some ultra low sulfur diesel in the early 2000s. And these have affected the trucking industry's costs quite a bit when these standards changed. Because, for example, like in 2004, when they started coming out with newer standards for those engines, people were like rushing to buy the 2003 engines. So they didn't have to comply or didn't have to spend the extra money on these more expensive 2004 engines. And then it changed the rules again in 2007. All throughout the 2010s, it was even more and more and more strict, all the way up until today, 2024. The cost of a truck from the 2004 to today, like a semi truck, has more than doubled.
Yeah.
And who do you think actually pays? Where do you think that trickles down to?
Well, the consumer.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not, you're like, oh, well, these trucking companies are going to have to just, pay for it. Well, no.
Bite the bullet.
That's not quite how that works. It works by increasing all of your transportation costs for all the goods that you buy. And everybody's sitting back going, man, I wonder why everything's so expensive right now. Well, it's definitely not going to come down because transportation, the vehicles are super expensive. But just to put it into perspective of what the emissions has changed from 1974 to today, let's say you had one block of emissions in 74. How much do you think that's reduced in 50 years?
I would have to say, well, looking at what Los Angeles looked like back in the 70s to where it's at now, 80%, 70%.
we used to be, so if you had one, it's less than 1% of what it was. It's 1/3 of 1% from what it was in the 70s.
Wicket, wait, okay, what? Okay, no, so this doesn't, what are we doing? What's going on?
We've dropped the emissions from heavy-duty trucks from one, from a block of one to one-third of 1% of what it was in the 70s.
But how much money, yeah, and how much money have we spent?
Well, we've spent trillions of dollars doing that. And now we're going to try to go to a zero emissions model. But the truth is, the electricity that we're going to try to put into this zero emissions trucks is not really zero emissions. So I would dare bet that when you do start to use a zero emissions battery operated vehicle, that you're actually going to go backwards in the emissions. You're going to go back to 2007 emissions, because electricity is pretty dirty, and there's no way to power all of these trucks. And in fact, one of these articles talks about a guy named Matt Horton. He's the CEO of Volterra. They make charging infrastructures for big facilities, right? So yeah, he's saying that if we have to switch all these trucks to electricity, one truck powering facility, like at a truck stop, will use as much electricity as the Empire State Building. That's one truck stop. And if you've ever traveled on a road trip and just seen how many, you know, the big Loves and the Flying J's and the pilot stations and the TAs and the Petros and all, I mean, there's semi trucks everywhere. And now we're going to have each one of those use as much power as the Empire State Building?
That doesn't make any sense. And again, so folks know, we're not anti-electric, not anti-hydro, wind, solar. We're actually just talking about how EVs are being shoved onto us when we should be going at the all of the above approach to get to clean, to get make sure that we have a clean, you know, our environment is as clean as possible, but we're not going broke doing it.
And we have a solution. At the end of this rant here, I'm going to provide you with a solution for this. It's going to kind of sound a little wacky, but I want to get there. So a couple things that are going to come up. One, vehicles, light-duty cars and vehicles, we want the EPA standard that just came out says 56% will be electric by 2030. That's only how many years away? That's like five and a half years, right?
A little over five. Yeah.
It's not very far away. And if you think about, like, what does that really mean? Like 56%, like, oh, okay, fine, let's do that. Well, right now, last year we produced 1.2 million EVs, and the total vehicles was over 15 million, almost 16 million. So that means we've got to really double the production of EVs every single year to get to that 56% by 2030.
Dude, they're double. Throwing numbers out. It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen.
Well, look at Ford's situation. The Ford situation came out. They just cut 2/3 of their employees for the Lightning truck, the number one selling electric truck in the country.
Yeah, because of lack of demand.
Lack of demand. You know what they built that plant to build? How many trucks they planned on building out of that plant?
How many?
150,000 a year. Do you know how many they sold in 23?
15,000?
24,000. So they ended up cutting 1,400. So they had 2,100 employees. They call them hourly. You know, they're normal production employees. Uh-huh. They had 2,100 of them. They cut. They let 700 retire, and then they moved another 700 over to the Bronco line, is what they called it. Like, okay, you're gonna move it over to the gas powered line, because that's a vehicle that's in demand. People want to buy it. But the Lightning truck, it's just not selling. So they planned for 150,000. They only sold 24,000. They cut their production by 2/3. So that, and then in the article, it's like, well, I wonder how many, or Ford didn't say what their output will be. Well, I'll tell you what, if you cut your staff by 2/3, your output's going to be 2/3 what it was the year before. I mean, it doesn't look like that's a growing market. You kind of makes you wonder, like, what's going to happen with all these other EV guys that are trying to produce these vehicles. But the whole point is the emission standards coming out in 27, you won't even be able to find a gas powered vehicle because they can't produce them, because it'll be impossible for them to meet the emission standards that the government has put out there. So now you're going to be like, well, I have to buy an EV because there's no gas powered cars for sale. So it's like they're forcing us to buy these by not being able to produce the gas powered ones. So it'll be interesting to see, like, what are our options, and then how much will your gas powered vehicle be worth? Because everybody's going to want a gas-powered vehicle, and it's going to be like, well, I got to keep my vehicle for a lot longer now.
Because those are going to be grandfathered in. The ones,
yeah.
Yeah, the grandfathered in after 2027 or whatever the date is.
It's going to be like a rush of people going to get a gas-powered vehicle to keep, you know, for a lot longer time than what you were used to. But eventually, I mean, your cars are going to get in wrecks, things are gonna break down and be, yeah, and they're just gonna be weeded out, and you're gonna be forced to have to go with this 56% of a electric vehicle. And it's gonna be challenging for the electric grid, because there's
challenging now for the electric grid before all these.
Yeah, it is challenging right now, but there's a group called the Western Electricity Coordinating Council. The WECC. And these guys are kind of in charge of making sure there's enough resources to produce the electricity. They do all the studies. It's a government sanctioned group. They just came out on, and this is on their website right now. And it says, well, to back up, like a backup story here, though, there's some requirements that the electric companies have to comply with of how reliable their service is, right? Mm-hmm. So if they have so many power outages per year, they're underneath the maintenance requirement for the electric grid. But on their website, it says that they have underestimated the vulnerability and the challenges appear worse than they did in 2020 assessment. And it says as early as 2025, all subregions, and this is the Western region that we're talking about. This is like Colorado to California. It says all subregions will be unable to maintain reliability because they will not be able to reduce the hours at risk for a loss of load enough, even if they build all planned resources and additions and import power.
This doesn't make sense. It just does not make it. Just, you're listening to The State of Energy. That's Tom Clark, Executive Director of Rocky Mountain Propane Association. My name is Rand DeWitt. You can find out how propane can improve your life by going to thestateofenergy.com. And this stuff just doesn't make sense, because to further highlight what you're talking about here, President Biden's $7.5 billion investment in EV charging stations was supposed to produce thousands and thousands of charging stations. Guess how many have been produced in 2 years after $7.5 billion?
100.
Seven. $7.5, basically just about a little over $1 billion per charging station has happened over the past 2 years. That's how I know that all of these numbers and dates and stuff they're putting out, 2027, 2030, we're doing this. No, it just feels like they know the pendulum is coming back. You can see it coming. Things are changing. People are like, okay, let's slow down on the whole EV thing. And it just seems like they see it coming, and they're just throwing it all out there as a last-ditch effort to try to make themselves seem like they know what they're talking about and like it's going to happen.
No, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, because if the government mandates these manufacturers to do this, they're gonna comply with it. It's going to happen.
I think there's going to be a shift maybe starting, I don't know, next year.
Maybe. If it doesn't, though, we have to provide a solution for all this increased demand of all these empire state building demands that are going to be all over the country for the electricity. And here's the solution. If you have a home or a business or farm and you have the opportunity to add a gas-powered, a propane-powered appliance and remove an electric appliance, that's going to help all of these rules and requirements be able to use, be able to have electricity. So if you have an electric water heater or an electric furnace or electric stove, switch it to propane. And that way you can actually reduce your demand on the grid so that all these trucks can get electricity to be able to make the delivery of the goods that you want.
And propane microgrids are going to be huge. That's basically what we're talking about.
I mean, we got to load shit. We got to shed some of our load here. We have got to shed some of our electric grid load so that we can support this new growth. And we're going to need to do that. Every single house is going to have to figure out, how am I going to reduce my electric demand so that my deliveries show up, so that my groceries show up? Because all these trucks that they're talking about, it's going to run on electricity. There's not enough electricity to go around, and we're going to need to shed our electric loads. And the answer is going to have to be some microgrids that run on propane all over the country. You're going to have to switch some of your appliances to run on propane or natural gas. We're going to have to use more gas infrastructure in order to support the new demand of all the electric stuff that we're going to be forced to use.
And you know what? It's amazing that there is a shift going on right now. And you're talking about trucks and truckers and what they're going to be doing. Did you see the story about the 24-year-old social media sensation who goes by Alex, the trucking guy?
Yeah.
He's built this huge following. He's like 24 years old, and he says during the pandemic, he was trying to go to college, trying to figure out what he was doing. But then he was watching a video online, like everybody else was doing during the pandemic, about this guy that was just doing trucking, and he was just just putting out videos of himself trucking. And now this kid Alex, who's 24 years old, is living his best life ever, and he's making great money. He's doing things he couldn't even fathom as a 24-year-old. And after you're done, and he doesn't have $250,000, $250,000 college loan that he's going to pay back afterwards.
The trucking industry is a great place to start a career. And in fact, in Wyoming, we just got some legislation passed that allows an 18-year-old to have their hazardous materials endorsement, your HME, to be able to start a career hauling different products in the oil business in Wyoming. And then once you do turn 21, you can take that and go around the country with it. But if you live in the state of Wyoming right now, you can go get your HME endorsement on your CDL, and you can start driving truck for a living and make some pretty good money at such a young age. So it's a little bonus because it gets these kids some experience locally, not traveling across state lines, but it gives them a good paying job with a local delivery company, and it gets them the foot in the door. Because if you wait until you're 21, you might have already chosen your career path, and you might be doing something different. So this is a good way to get young adults into the trucking world. And it has a great pay with it.
Yeah, I mean, it allows them to get out in front, and it is. And this business is going to continue to evolve, especially in the propane industry, as we've often talked about. I mean, it's. Do you think this is going to be something that's going to shift to other states as well?
Yeah, it possibly could. I think Indiana has it, as they passed that as well. But the reality is, we kind of laugh and joke about all these EV trucks, but realistically, what'll end up happening is renewable propane, renewable diesel, bioproducts, hydrogen. This is going to have to take place of all this electricity that we're trying to have on demand. And there's a big opportunity to provide clean, affordable energy that's going to be renewable and abundant. And that's what we're going to be at. And propane is going to be another product that's going to shine through all of this mess. And it's going to be there to save the day again.
That guy with a big brain and the Moses-like beard is Tom Clark. Executive Director of Rocky Mountain Propane Association. My name is Rand DeWitt, and we are always online at thestateofenergy.com.